start with the first case, which is case number 78746, Williams versus Davis. We have Mr. Wall representing the appellant as part of our pro bono project, Mr. Hansen representing the respondent. And Mr. Wall, did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, I would like to reserve about 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, you may do so, and we'll go ahead and proceed. Mr. Wall, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's great to be able to be here. Michael Wall representing Berthenia Williams. Ms. Williams was involved in an automobile accident, which claims to have been rear-ended and to have suffered personal injuries. Never got to try that case at her trial de novo because at the time that the case should have come to trial, she was incarcerated because of a domestic dispute. She was never charged with any crimes, but there's no doubt that on March 7th, the date that the pretrial was supposed to take place, she was incarcerated, and that on March 8th, the date of the trial, she was also incarcerated. There has been some speculation that she may have been released that morning, and whether or not that is true seems to me to be an irrelevant point. The point is that because of her incarceration, she was unable to appear at the pretrial. She was unable to appear at the trial. And when this was pointed out to the short trial judge who was presiding at the time, her response was, "I can't give you legal advice." I find that to be incredible because people call the JEA or call the court clerks all the time and say, oh, this has happened or that has happened, what should we do, and get the advice, file a motion. I don't think the advice to file a motion would be giving legal advice, but even if it were, I would suggest that the judge, the short trial judge, Judge Hunt, certainly had an obligation to take the representation that Berthenia had been incarcerated and that was the reason that she did not appear seriously and to have investigated that on her own. I think it's a gross abuse of discretion that she did not do so. Instead, days later, a directed judgment was entered by the district judge, who apparently was or was not informed about this situation. And Berthenia then filed a timely motion. And that motion, although short, is clearly seeking substantive relief. It says, I was incarcerated. Please reschedule my trial date. Motion was never heard by any court. It wasn't heard by the district court. It wasn't heard by the trial judge. And so Berthenia lost her court date. And I suggest that the only issue in this case is that a violation of due process. I suggest that the right of access to the courts is based in due process concerns and fundamental fairness. And Berthenia was not afforded due process or fundamental fairness. In response to this argument, opposing counsel has not engaged in a discussion about due process. Instead, opposing counsel is engaged in a discussion about whether or not Berthenia is telling the truth and whether or not she was prepared to go to trial anyway. Neither of those issues would seem to be the issue that is before this court. With respect to the question of whether or not she was telling the truth, that's a matter that should have been resolved in district court through an evidentiary hearing or whatever other process was necessary once the motion telling the court that she was incarcerated was filed. Instead, the motion was ignored. That motion is technically still pending, which gives this court an interesting jurisdictional question, whether or not this court even has jurisdiction to hear the matter at this time. With respect to the other argument, the argument that she wasn't ready to go to trial, well, that may or may not be true, and if it is true, had she proceeded to trial, she probably would have lost, not being prepared. but the only basis that was given by the district court missed the action, to direct a verdict actually, was that she didn't appear. So the issue of whether or not she was prepared, it wasn't a discovery sanction. There's no discovery issue before this court. There's no issue before this court as to exactly when she was released, because that matter isn't in the record. Assuming, for the sake of argument, that Bruthenia was released on the morning of the 8th, her memory is that she was released on that. She doesn't know for sure what day, but if it was that date, it was about 3:30 in the morning, according to her memory, which may be consistent with the hearsay of 2 o'clock. That may have taken them that long to process her. In any event, she was released hours before trial after having been denied an opportunity to contact anyone while she was incarcerated, knowing that there was an order out there that said if she didn't appear on the 7th, nothing was happening on the 8th, the trial would not go forward. And she apparently, and she checked herself into a hospital on that same date, the date
Counsel?
That she was released. Yes.
Counsel, do you think this court should perhaps do a limited remand to get the resolution of the pending motion so that we proceed on the other issues in the case?
I believe that that motion is clearly a tolling motion, which in my view means this court does not have jurisdiction. That jurisdiction has not been properly invoked. I think that a remand to resolve the motion would be a good idea. I think, however, in light of how clear the issue is in this case and how much time has elapsed, that it would be entirely appropriate for this court to direct that the motion be granted rather than simply heard under all of the circumstances of this case. I guess if the court truly doesn't have jurisdiction because it is a tolling motion, and I think it's a tolling motion, I think that under AA Primo, which is very, very broad, it's a written motion, timely filed, dates grounds for relief, and requests substantive alteration of the judgment. That's a tolling motion. It hasn't been resolved. So this court's jurisdiction is not yet invoked. If it's a non-tolling motion, the district court should have resolved it anyway. As I am always telling the district court judges, they don't seem to listen to me, but I'm always telling them that the filing of the notice of appeal divests the district court taking certain action which might interfere with the appellate court's jurisdiction, but it never divests the district court of jurisdiction to hear and properly dispose of a motion that is pending. It always has the duty and jurisdiction to do that. Didn't do that in this case. I don't think there is any factual issue as to whether or not Bruthenia was incarcerated, and assuming she didn't beeline over to the court after she was released, it seems to me a gross abuse of discretion under these circumstances still have dismissed her case and not have afforded her an opportunity to appear for trial. So in answer to your question, Justice Stiglitz, I would say I think this court has to dismiss this matter for lack of jurisdiction. And I suggest that this court, in doing so, could suggest to the district court that under the circumstances that seem apparent here, it would seem that a granting of that motion would be appropriate. And
Mr. Wall, I'm sorry to interrupt you at the end of your argument there on that tolling motion issue, but assuming that we have or will end up having jurisdiction on this, one of the things you just said was it was a gross abuse of discretion, which is the term of art that we used on the Court of Appeals for the Hunter v. Gang case involving a dismissal with prejudice. And how would you reconcile Hunter v. Gang and that case and the dismissal with prejudice under those facts with what happened here with the courts dismissing this with prejudice?
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that there are two things. First, I would suggest that the issue isn't whether there's an abuse of discretion here. because the issue here is fundamentally a denial of due process, which this court reviews de novo. But assuming that discretion enters into it, the Hunter case sets forth the issues that a court should consider when dismissing a case based on discovery, sanctions, or for those types of issues, and gives a standard under which the court should review the matter to determine whether or not there should be a dismissal. This wasn't a dismissal based on a sanction for any of those reasons, and so Hunter doesn't directly apply, but even if those standards apply, nobody has applied those standards. And if the court were to, if the district court were to apply those standards, it would have to come to the conclusion that the sanction of dismissal would be too severe a sanction and a gross abuse of discretion under the circumstances of this case. So
Mr. Walk, I ask you, in hindsight, wouldn't 60B have been a better vehicle for your client to pursue? Or what's your thoughts on that, considering this procedural morass we're in?
Yes, Your Honor, I think she did pursue 60B. I think that that motion, although she didn't cite what her authority was, if you look at what the substance of the motion, it's a 60B motion. And as a 60B motion, it is a tolling motion under AA Primo. But regardless of whether she pursued a motion for a new trial when there was no trial or a 60B motion, either way, the standard should still be the same. Under the circumstances of this case, where she had no opportunity to appear because she was incarcerated, regardless of which standard you apply, it's clearly a gross abuse of discretion to have just gone forward and tell her, I can't give you legal advice. And then after knowing that there was this issue of incarceration, to not go on your computer and find out whether or not she was incarcerated, or issue an order saying this is how we're going to respond to this, we're going to have a hearing about it or something. Instead, she went ahead after knowing that, sent an ex parte communication to opposing counsel saying, I'm not going to do anything about this, and entered the judgment anyway. I would like to reserve the rest of the time if I could.
Thank you. Mr. Hansen, you may proceed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honors. Good to be here today. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. So, just briefly, the facts, as you know, this dealt with a motor vehicle accident that occurred. Ms. Virginia Williams obtained an attorney. He filed a lawsuit against my client, Mr. Davis, and the matter proceeded to arbitration. She had an attorney at that time. The arbitrator found that her testimony about the accident and the evidence was less than credible, as we've cited in our brief. So, the arbitrator found for the defense, and it cost my client. Her attorney then filed for a trial de novo and promptly withdrew from the case. The case was then sent to the short trial judge, Judge Hunt. That, and Judge Hunt let Ms. Williams know that she needed to comply with the rules, even though she was an improper person. She still had a duty to comply with the discovery rules, present her evidence anew. Again, this is a trial de novo, which means it's new information, new discovery procedures, not necessarily procedures, but new discovery requirements to prepare for the case, for trial. And the judge admonished Ms. Williams that, look, you need to do these things, and you can't just rely on, you know, showing up. So she didn't do anything, which we've set forth in our brief. Numerous times the judge warned her in orders that if she did not comply with the rules and she didn't comply with the requirements to produce her evidence for trial, that could be invoked and imposed, including dismissal of her case. So this went on for months. Months after months after months, she continued to appear. We did continue the matter various times because of certain issues, as we've set forth in our brief. And yet, despite the admonishments by the judge several times to Ms. Williams that she needed to provide her documents for trial, she never did. Finally, on March 7th, she was supposed to appear, present her documents. The discovery cutoff actually had been postponed several times and extended till February of 2019. After the discovery cutoff, Ms. Williams still had not produced a single document to prepare for trial or to give a defense of what she was going to claim. And so when we appeared for the pretrial conference, Ms. Brithenia Williams was not present. Now, we didn't know at the time that she was incarcerated. Apparently, she was on the date of the pretrial conference on March 7th. But again, at that point, nothing had been presented. And so the judge, out of abundance of caution, said, we're just going to appear for trial tomorrow and see if she shows up. We then appeared for trial on March 8th with my client, Mr. Davis. We had our documents ready. We had our defenses ready. The jury was sitting in the waiting room. And Ms. Williams did not appear. She did not show up. She didn't call. There was no notice of what had happened. And so after waiting for a period of time, the judge asked if there was any type of a motion that should be made, at which point I decided to say that we would like the case dismissed because Ms. Brithenia had continuously failed to comply with the judge's orders and had not complied with the requirement to prepare for trial or be at trial. So Mr. Wall indicated that the directed verdict was only based on the fact that Ms. Brithenia Williams did not appear for trial. That is not true.
How do you get a directed verdict if the jury wasn't sworn and evidence wasn't presented? How do you get a, I mean, your motion was a directed verdict. It wasn't based on a dismissal based on her non-appearance.
It was based on, mainly, again, it was, if you looked at the order of directed verdict, the matter did come for trial. And Ms. Brithenia Williams did not present any evidence. And so that's what it says in the actual order. It says that the plaintiff was duly noticed of the date and time of trial, failed to appear to present evidence to support her claims. The defendant moved for a directed verdict based on the any evidence or appear at trial. So this was based on the fact that she not only didn't appear, but failed to present any evidence. And that's the key here, is that she had nothing to present.
Mr. Hansen, Mr. Hansen, was the jury impaneled, the short trial jury, were they impaneled before the court, before Judge Hunt started any type of proceedings?
No, Your Honor, they were not impaneled. They were side waiting, and we didn't think that there was a reason to impanel them, as there was nothing to say.
Okay.
There was no evidence to present.
Mr. Hansen, can you also, what's your position on Mr. Wall's argument that this court could interpret the motion that Ms. Williams filed as a 60B motion based upon inexcusable neglect and those factors? What's your position on that?
Right, Your Honor. Basically, everything that she tries to argue, whether it's a motion to dismiss under 41B, whether it's a directed verdict under NRCP 50, or it's a request for relief under NRCP 60, Ms. Williams has to show some indication that she has complied in good faith with rules. She has to show that there was something that she really, you know, like inexcusable neglect, that she had could have done something but just didn't because there was circumstances beyond her control. Again, this is setting aside the fact that she did not tell the truth about her apparent incarceration. She had at least 9 months to present evidence, to comply with the rules, and to get ready for trial. And so in order for her to invoke the benefits of NRCP 60, she's also got to have the ability to show that she would have had an ability to prevail, or at least show a good faith reason that she would have something to discuss at trial. And she can't do that because she has no evidence. She didn't present her medical records. She didn't present any photographs. She didn't present any witnesses, a witness list, nothing. So this is trial by ambush. We don't allow that in this state because we have discovery rules that allow both sides to be prepared for trial in order to know what the other side is going to be bringing to trial. And in this case, the defendant didn't have that because Ms. Williams never presented a single shred of paper or other information to support the claims that she was going to make at trial.
But counsel,
and
this,
allowing her,
counsel, I may just briefly,
yeah.
But this dismissal was based on her failure to appear. This particular dismissal, whether there were other grounds or other reasons that you may have been entitled to move for sanctions, including dismissal, that's not what we have here. So I'm not sure just why before that order was signed or forwarded, once you guys got the phone call, why wasn't she just brought into court on an order to show cause so she could have a hearing on these matters? Were you in custody? When did you get out? or what's going on? It's a procedurally, it's kind of a conundrum for us here.
I understand, and my only argument to that, or to respond to that, is just to say I'm not inside the head of the short trial judge. I don't know exactly what she did. All I know is that Mr. Wall indicated there was some type of ex parte contact. I'm not aware of any ex parte contact other than at the trial itself, or perhaps the pretrial that we're supposed to go to, where we discussed the fact that Ms. Williams was not there. We then said we'd go to the trial. Ms. Williams didn't show up. And then I got an email from the judge saying that Ms. Williams had called her that afternoon of the trial saying that she had been incarcerated. And you saw the email that was part of the brief that said, basically, I can't give her legal advice. So I'm not sure what the judge did, other than I know that the judge indicated in that supplemental document that was filed in April of 2019 that she had been given the motion and she was supposed to decide on that, but apparently never had. So I don't know what the judge did, other than my only understanding is perhaps the judge believed that jurisdiction had been removed from her because of the fact that the notice of appeal was filed. And under the case that we cited, the Honeycutt case, the district court does not have the ability to grant a new trial at that time. Based on my reading of the case, all they can do is deny the motion, which would then simply place us back on appeal to determine whether or not Ms. Williams' rights were actually violated. So I can't address that necessarily, other than to say we go back and look at of what Ms. Williams would do. There is no possibility that she could have more evidence because her time had lapsed multiple times. And so it's essentially an exercise in futility. If we're going to give her a new trial, then what is she supposed to do at that point, because she cannot produce any evidence? And if she were allowed to produce that, that is a complete miscarriage of justice to my client, because we were the ones that complied with the rules, and now we're just going to give Ms. Williams a pass on the fact that she did not comply with the discovery rules for over 9 months. That's unfair and does not serve justice.
Mr. Hansen, I'll put the question to you that I put to Mr. Wall. Should we be doing a limited remand just to let the short trial judge rule on the pending motion? I mean, how do we even get to the other half of the issues in this case? Maybe we do, maybe we don't. But right. Would that be a proper way to kind of move toward resolution in this matter?
Well, that I've thought about that a lot.
And it's okay to say no.
Yeah. Well, my position is we're just going to end up where we are again. I mean, regardless of the facts of what happens down below, I don't believe that the trial court judge or the short trial judge is going to be making any ruling. She hasn't decided the motion. She told Ms. Williams that she couldn't give her legal advice. The motion itself doesn't have any more documentation to it to support why relief should be granted, as Ms. Williams requested. And so I find it very unlikely that the trial court judge or the short trial judge in this case is going to grant any type of relief. I believe the decision would be, no, you're not going to do that. So that puts us right back where we are. The issues in the case are whether or not Ms. Williams was given a fair trial. Judge Hunt signed the order directing the verdict for the defendant, whatever that may mean. The defendant won because Ms. Williams didn't show up at trial and didn't present any evidence to support her case.
Mr. Hansen, assuming,
yes.
Mr. Hansen, this is Justice Silver. Assuming yes. We agree with your position, how do you get a dismissal with prejudice in this under this fact pattern? And where are the findings to make this dismissal with prejudice?
Well, again, the trial orders that the judge issued, the pretrial orders that we set forth in our brief and are part of the thing, part of the appellate brief and the appendix, show very clearly that Ms. Williams was required to do certain things to prepare for trial. And in big, bold letters, it said, if she does not comply with these requirements, the case can be dismissed.
I know, but totally agree with you on that point.
Right.
And we 100% agree with you. But based on a non-appearance, how does it support a dismissal with prejudice as opposed to a dismissal without prejudice? How does it stand to be affirmed with prejudice based on these facts?
My response to that is simply that Ms. Williams had over 9 months to prepare trial and simply didn't. And under the Hunter versus Gang case, she's required to prosecute her case. And if she doesn't, she has no ability to go back and say, well, give me another chance. This is a mulligan. I want more opportunities to be able to forward my case and present evidence at this point. So the dismissal with prejudice was done because this was the time set for trial. There were orders in place that she should have complied with that she didn't. And so also the statute of limitations was over. She could not refile her case anyway because at that point it was too late. So a dismissal without prejudice or with prejudice would have resulted in the same action because the statute of limitations had run. So that's my understanding of why the dismissal with prejudice was given is because the statute was done. Ms. Williams was given every opportunity to prepare and present evidence at trial. Whether or not she appeared or not is irrelevant because trial could not have occurred based on her failures in the prior months to present any documents. So the only option was to dismiss it with prejudice as it could not have been brought again. So, Your Honors, respectfully, I believe that much of this, I understand the procedural conundrum this court faces. I believe that a remand would simply delay the inevitable. We'd be back here arguing the same merits. And I don't think that the court is divested of jurisdiction simply because there's a pending motion in district court that may or may not be a tolling motion or may not have any substantive relief. The issues are before this court properly on the appeal, and I believe they should be addressed. And due process was, in fact, given to Ms. Williams. She had her in court multiple days in court, but she failed to appear and lied about the fact that she was not able to come to trial, and then was caught red-handed in the misrepresentation to this court. If she wants due process and fundamental fairness, she has to have clean hands to do that, and she doesn't. And that's our problem, is she keeps asking for relief when all of the evidence leading up to this point has shown that she's not entitled to that because she has not complied with the rules.
But Mr. Hansen, I'm sorry, it was a good wrap, but my question is, wouldn't a hearing have been the place for her to come in and say, I was in jail up until a certain amount of time, and here's why I didn't come, and then you to present your evidence? I mean, shouldn't that all have been done in a hearing in front of the trial judge to make that determination about the reason why she missed?
Perhaps, but even if it did happen, how do we get around the fact that she had no evidence to present? Are we supposed to waste the judicial resources?
But that's a different motion. I mean, that's a different ask of the court. That's a different hearing. That's a different motion than this here.
My understanding, Your Honor, my understanding is that she is asking for a new trial. And there simply has to be a reason for the new trial. And if a new trial were granted, which I don't believe that the facts warrant a new trial anyway, but even if it were granted, how then would she present evidence when she has none? So it's an exercise in futility, as I said in my brief. We can't get around the fact that she would be unable to present any evidence or proceed with trial, and so it's a waste of judicial resources to order that when it's impossible for her to get any relief in getting a new trial. There has to be a reason for the trial, and because she can't present evidence or show that she has any chance of success on the merits, it's a waste of resources to do that. That's my response.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Wall, you have about, we went over with Mr. Hansen a little bit, so we'll add an additional minute to your rebuttal time. So you have 3 minutes and 55 seconds. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. In response, I would say two things initially. Ruthini is not looking for a new trial. Ruthini is looking for a trial. It was never afforded a trial. She doesn't have to demonstrate that she's entitled to a new trial. Due process is never a waste of time or fundamentally unfair. Due process is what what Berthinia is entitled. All the process in the world that may have been given to her before she was denied her opportunity of a trial does not take the place of the denial of access to the court, which is a direct due process violation and is the only issue that we're here about today, because at the pretrial, when Berthenia didn't show up and didn't have documents, Mr. Hansen asked for a discovery sanctions and a dismissal at that point, and it was denied. The dismissal in this case was not, it wasn't dismissed for because she didn't have enough evidence. It wasn't dismissed because she didn't prepare for trial. It was a directed verdict because she didn't appear. And she didn't appear because she was incarcerated. So the idea that, it wouldn't have mattered whether she showed up or not because she didn't have any evidence, that doesn't satisfy due process standards. No matter how strong the argument, she would have lost anyway. No matter what the argument is based on, she would have lost anyway. That is an argument that cannot defeat a fundamental denial of due process. And that's what we have, denial of due process. A remand to the district court may be futile in the sense that Berthenia may not be able to prove her claim, and she may lose on a different basis. But she lost on the basis that she didn't appear because she was incarcerated, and the law cannot stand that. If there is a remand, there has to be direction to the district court that if the motion is not granted, it cannot be on the basis that there is some other reason to dismiss. Let them grant the motion, let them address improper motion practice or whatever other reason there might be to dismiss, but you cannot deny Berthenia her day in court because she's incarcerated and then say all of this discovery was ongoing, she was pro per and she didn't do what she needed to do, so she wouldn't have been able to prove her case anyway. And that's all we have heard from beginning to end in this case from the other side, except one other thing, which offends me again, which is he called Berthenia a liar. He didn't use the word. He said she did not tell the truth about her incarceration. That is absolutely untrue based on this record. He makes that argument based on an email from the short trial judge, statement that was made in the motion, and another statement, which may or may not be typographical or may have been what was actually believed in the notice of appeal, and putting them together, he says they can't add them up, and so they're a lie. Berthenia did not lie. She was incarcerated on the 7th and the 8th. She was released, and she wasn't able to attend trial because of her incarceration. That's the only issue this court has to deal with. It needs to go back to the district court with a clear statement. You cannot deny Berthenia her trial because she was incarcerated.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wall. Mr. Hansen, thank you for your excellent argument and briefs. Very interesting procedural question here that you both raised. So we'll take the matter under submission at this time, and we'll be in recess till we're ready to set up for our 10:30 argument this morning. Mm-hmm.